Good morning. This is the Fairbanks City Council regular work session. Today is Tuesday, May 12th. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayor O'Neill.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth is absent. Ms. Therian?
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle?
I'm here.
Ms. Tidwell?
Here.
Mr. Marnie?
I'm here.
Mr. Ringsten?
Here.
All right, we have addressed items 2, 3, and 4 on our agenda, so they're crossed out this morning. So we're to ordinance number 6347, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Chapter 46, Article 4, Division 4, Illegal Campsites. This is sponsored by myself, and the item is advanced to May 18th. Mr. Sanders, could you do a staff report for us, please?
Yes, Mayor. Good morning, everybody. This ordinance on illegal campsites, it really hasn't changed any from work session last week or from last night. Basically just firming up what we already do, changing a 72-hour notice to a 24-hour notice for emergencies, and then when it comes to saving stuff rather than saving all their belongings for 30 days, moving it to 10 days, which is more manageable, and it's in line with what we've been doing for years. So really, this is just tightening up what we're already doing.
Great, thank you, Mr. Sanders. Are there any questions, Councilmember Sprinkle?
Where do we store things if we store them at all?
Typically what we try to do is we try to use the 10 day so that anything that's left on site after the 10 days is just considered abandoned. If we need to store stuff, we try to keep it very limited to what we store, just because of the volume of stuff that accumulates in encampments. But I know we've saved like some bikes and stuff over here. There was a time when I was a housing coordinator where we saved a couple tents and some sleeping bags that were just stored in my office until the time was up for those. But for the most part, we seldom use the 3-day thing. We use the 10-day, then wait for the end of the 10 days, and then everything that's abandoned is considered abandoned.
So it's rare that we don't have a storage area designated.
Right. I mean, I'm sure we could find something in cold storage or warm storage, depending upon what it was, but.
And I'm going to follow up and just say, with this new or tightened version, will that change? Do you think we'll need to show more storage area or not?
No, I think everything's going to stay the same on that. This is really just cleaning up, because like what we had before was, it really wasn't useful. The 3-day thing wasn't useful. This ordinance, when it was originally drafted, was because of one very specific incident where somebody was basically in the right of way, and I didn't agree with that. I think he should have been moved off the right of way immediately because it wasn't safe. But but at the time we didn't have anything saying we could do that.
So someone was living in a right of way.
Yes.
A median, you said, at one point, you said.
Yeah, it was a corner of a, it was long time ago.
All right, thank you.
Councilmember Therian.
Thank you, Mike. With regard to the tents and sleeping bags, can we donate them to charity so other people can use them, or do you just throw them away?
Usually those are, they'll take, if they're useful, if they're usable, they'll take those with them, when they leave. But I don't remember, other than, one time a few years ago, where they were stored stuff in there, I don't remember that ever happening again.
But we could.
I don't see why not.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Marnie.
So have we identified any of these campsites so far this spring?
We have some that are springing back up in places where they've been before.
So at Wainwright?
Right. Okay. Yep, exactly. That one's starting to come back. And I believe Mr. Cotter has already reached out to DOT about that one. And then I heard that underneath some of the bridges are starting to fill up again. So okay. Those will, once we get the nighttime security, which I believe will start next week, those ones should be taken care of.
So this includes the police department, public works. Who else? And our staff, Jared?
Jared, that's pretty much it. I mean, the HART team will be going into the encampments to offer services, but we're trying to keep them separate from the abatement process so that they're not seen as the people doing the abatement.
Okay. Does the fire department get involved in any of this?
Typically not. I mean, but if there was, you know, some sort of medical emergency or something, they would.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.
Mr. Ringstead.
One of the things that kind of frustrates me in this is we can go about and say, okay, we're going to clean all these things out. Then where do they go? They cross the city limits into the borough or into the state's right-of-ways or something, you know, something similar to that. Have we had any conversation with the borough and the state in terms of what their plans are? I mean, I feel like we're just pushing them back and forth between each other sometimes. And that doesn't get any of us where we really want to get to.
We talk with the borough and state on a constant basis, so we're always partnering with them on this sort of stuff. Really, we're the only show in town that has the you know, the real
authority,
the real resources on this. I mean, anybody, you know, any of their public works can clean something up, but we're the only ones that really have the dedicated social services.
That's pretty cool.
And as I understand it, HART, our new program, will help some of these folks. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And that starts next week?
It should start, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they go and personally handle or discuss or try to attain some help for these folks. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Thank you.
Mr. Burney.
So, Mayor, I know we talked about it briefly last night. So when are we going to launch the second part of this, the loitering and that part of the picture? It kind of dovetails off this.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Mr. Marney. The administration has been working on the loitering ordinance as well as a few other ordinances, and they'll be coming before you as soon as they're ready, as soon as they've worked through the process of each department.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, Mr. Ringstead.
I'm glad you're doing that. I mean, I think in my mind the bigger message here is we have to say some things. You got to be responsible for yourself. You can't be taking advantage of other people and their properties and the city and what have you. But what is acceptable behavior? Excuse me. And I think the loitering piece and this piece, all these pieces kind of fit together, but that there's an overarching message that we have to say that, you know, just laying around on the sidewalks isn't acceptable anymore. So I'm pleased that we're going forward on several fronts.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is such a complex issue. You know, you can't just have one thing. What we're trying to do is strengthen the powers that we have. So we have the ability to respond with the resources that we do have. And we've, you know, engaged the community in several ways to encourage them to be on the streets, encourage them to interact with our parks and enjoy our downtown. And you know, if you're interested, I can provide several studies where more eyes on the street really does help deter that type of behavior. And so that, you know, that's what it takes. I think one thing that's really important to remember is oftentimes we're dealing with folks who have severe trauma. They have severe mental illness, they have severe substance abuse, and if we don't have a holistic way to address those issues, we're never going to see any changes on the streets.
That's why, you know, that's why to me, getting, I mentioned last night about getting better data, because it might, that some people have a different solution than other people, and we need to know what, how many people we have in this category and how many people, because there is no silver bullet.
Yeah.
And I think that good data is going to at least understand better.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think you're absolutely right. And I mean, when you take an inventory of the amount of folks who are working in social services in this city, it's pretty remarkable. I think what we can do better is work together and collaborate. So we have better open means of communication more often times that we're checking in with each other. So that we can offer, you know, the resources that are available to folks. You know, sometimes they fall through the cracks because these are really tough cases. But you know, these are individuals who are part of our community, and they deserve the dignity that that we can offer them. Mr. Marnie?
Well, I know a lot of it. I think the police department calls them frequent flyers. The gentleman that attacked John had, I think, 45 priors. The gentleman that attacked Nick had like 70 some odd priors. So that's, if there's anything the city can do about that, to, you know, why are we releasing these people back in the public when they have so many priors and there's no recourse?
Yeah, I think it's a really great question. I think we should consider having this as a legislative priority to the state next year. You know, we're very limited in how, you know, catch and release happens with criminals in this community. We're limited by what the state can offer, what the capacity that they have, and the DA's office. You know, there's a lot of steps that go to that. So it's a constant continuation, but I think elevating it through organizations like AML and to the legislature really should be a priority of this body. Ms. Sprinkle?
I think, gosh, it was at least a year ago, we had a visit from the DA himself. He came to talk to us about an issue we had at the post office, and I wonder if we couldn't invite him back and get a sense of where he thinks things are now, if there's been any change, to speak to us, whether it's working or regular city council. I'd love to hear from him again, and maybe John could talk further because he's experienced the process. Say again?
Yeah, DA Dallaire is very open to working with us. I think it would be smart of us to think about a strategy and how we want to engage these individuals. I think that gets us further than simply interrogating somebody who comes to counsel, for lack of a better word. That's not what you mean, I know. But I think, you know, having a real intention in how we're going to approach our partners is, helps us move the conversation forward faster.
Okay, that sounds good. I would love then, I don't know how the process wants to look from your administration, but I think we should have a conversation about that with him, and then maybe you can start forming that, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks.
Ms. Therrien?
I'm just wondering how many of these individuals are veterans, and whether or not we should get in touch with the veterans groups here as well so that they can help us and help them at the same time, because we're not hearing very much about veterans, but I'm sure some of them have PTSD and other issues, so I think we should look into that as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. Mr. Sanders, do you have something to add?
So Fairbanks has been, for veteran homelessness, we've been at functional zero for several years now, and what that means is that there's more housing resources for veterans than we have homeless vets. They just have to be willing to accept it. It's been like that since early in my time as the housing coordinator. They reached that goal.
If I could just, how many veterans are refusing that help? Do you have any idea? Is it just a few, or?
I mean, I haven't had access to the homeless management information system in several years now, but back then, not only were we at functional zero, there were times where we were at actual zero. So I didn't know of any at the time, but I mean, obviously I haven't had access to that system in several years because you have to have a need for that system.
That sounds like it.
Yeah, we have, there's several resources for veterans. A lot of them are housed out of the Rescue Mission. Some are, you know, some are through the VA itself. But Fairbanks is the hub for a lot of the veteran services for homelessness.
Mr. Ringstead.
Last night, Tom mentioned something that I think is going to be a part of this in his effort and discussions with Supreme Court members about going forward with that effort. Addressing people, and I think we need to have that as a piece of our action, and we need to support Tom and his efforts to do that.
I hope that means resources when we need to come to the council to support those.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Only because you're just starting this conversation. What does it take to create the mental health court? Is that going to take a while? What does that mean?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, and I sincerely appreciate the interest and support, and I've gotten it from literally all sides, from FPD and the court system to the behavioral health treatment providers to you all around this table. When I spoke with Justice Pate, his experience in standing up a new diversionary court, which is kind of what we're talking about, he said his experience, it was about a year and a half, and he said the important piece of this is you're building relationships that are going to result in a changed pattern. So instead of running people that have undiagnosed, untreated mental health issues through the normal process, and you see where that has gotten us, to actually stand up a different process that will help them. He also mentioned, and just, you know, as long as we're here, we talked about the difference between the drug court, the therapeutic court, and how a mental health court might operate. In a drug court, you typically have someone, they're an early offender, they've gotten a DUI or some pretty significant charge against them, and that is kind of hanging over their head and motivating them to get through a rather lengthy process. Drug court is, I think, year, 18 months, something like this. I mean, it's a pretty long process. Whereas with the mental health court, the focus is a little bit different. It's not as long range on the individuals. It's you have somebody who is in crisis and you're trying to, as quickly as possible, connect them to resources. A lot of times that looks like medication. A lot of times that looks like just quick treatment so that they can get the diagnosis and they can get on the right track. And it's, frankly, a lot of these individuals that I, you know, even my office sees, they're low-level offenders that are doing things that are just red flags all over the place, but our system just isn't designed to really deal with them. So I'm hoping that Justice Pate's advice Judge Bennett and some of the folks here in town, I'm hoping we can get some solid recognition that this is where we need to go. Anchorage has a mental health court, and Judge Rhodes, who helped set that up, and Kathy Traver, who was the court administrator back in the day that helped set that up, have both been enlisted in this effort to try to help us set something up here in Fairbanks. So they're starting to coalesce a team, and as Justice Pate said, build the relationships. I think a year and a half, and hopefully we'll have something stood up where we can deal with these folks. If you'll indulge me one more second, I literally spoke with a defense attorney day before, and this individual had been released from FCC. They were off their meds. They got, so FCC gives you a 10-day kind of medication as you go out the door. So they got 10 days worth of meds. They were connected to a treatment provider, and that was enough stability for them to go from somebody that was trespassing, I think he picked up an assault on an officer and a couple other charges, booked at FCC, out, and stabilized, and night and day difference. Driving a car, nice clean clothes, how are you doing, not mumbling, not whatever, just it was a remarkable transformation in such a short period of time. You know, God willing, that person stays on their meds and you know, stays on the treatment protocol, but that person, you're taking that person off of the roles of people that are trespassing and assaulting and doing all this stuff, and hopefully putting them on the roles of people that are productive citizens. So thank you for indulging me on this.
From our point of view, is there anything we can help in the way of pushing that forward? Is it just to allow them to coalesce? What's our next step?
No, I love that question. So, the next step is I need to talk to Judge Bennett. I need to circle back with some of the treatment providers. As the mayor said, I mean, there will likely come a time where, you know, we need to start having meetings over here, or start hosting meetings. I think right now where my mind is just pulling all the pieces together and all the players together, and some really heavy hitters have come forward recently and said that they want to help. So the fact that you all want to help, and I actually made a note, Councilmember Sprinkle, to your Joe Dallaire comment, I was like, well, maybe, you know, when Joe is here visiting with us, we can kind of talk about the importance of mental health court. I know that they know that too. They work with the drug court a lot. So, yeah.
Thank you.
It'll be a role, for sure.
Okay.
Just one last problem is involuntary commitment is so hard that at some point we need to look at that as a legislative priority and see what we can do, because it's almost impossible to get somebody involuntary committed. And I'm sure Mr. Chard knows that very well. So just something to think about for the future, because if they can't get committed when they don't want treatment, then they're just out there not getting any help. So, and it's very, very difficult.
Yeah. That's a really key point, Ms. Therrien. The Alaska Behavioral Health Organization has a plan to open a stabilization center in Fairbanks. Their funding was recently drastically cut by the legislature, and so that has hindered some of their progress in opening up a stabilization center here. They've been talking about it for a year or two. It seemed like they were getting pretty close to opening this summer, but as of now, those plans have been on hold. So there is a recognition that that's a gaping hole, and there are motivations to get that running, but it is a significant financial commitment.
Could we pass a resolution supporting that? Do you think that would help at all, or?
Sure. I don't think it could hurt. Yeah. I don't know what the legislature is doing right now.
Yeah, I understand. Maybe, Tom, you could get
but
something ready.
The more we can raise a red flag about Fairbanks, yeah. I think, is yeah. always good.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. I feel like I'm talking a lot this morning, but I have to give kudos also to the mayor. She has been running point on a lot of this conversation and connecting critical partners that I think are going to be essential in this. You know, we talk about Alaska Behavioral Health and their res center. That's a perfect example. I mean, these pieces need to come into play. I know Mike mentioned Eric Boyer the other day with the trust, kind of in our partnership with the trust, another critical partner. You have the right people, and with you on council, you have the right posture to get this done. We just need to connect the dots, and we're getting there.
Good. And to add to that, I'd like to say that, you know, Fairbanks is kind of the North Star for the state. These organizations are looking at our teams and asking them to apply for grants, asking them if they can help and set up programs around the state. So we really are setting an example. Although the progress seems slow and we see a growing need in our community, there's a lot of people working very hard on this. Yes, it is. Okay, well, we'll move on to the Finance Committee report. Ms. Bell.
Thank you, Mayor, and good morning, everyone. The Finance Committee is scheduled to meet on Thursday, May the 28th. We'll take a look at the April 30th report. We'll also review the second budget amendment, and we'll continue our discussion on parking services. Just some key dates that are happening regarding this work session. On June 2nd, we'll look at the mill levy and garbage fees. Those are annual reviews. And on June the 8th is the audit presentation for your work session. I know that you're all excited about that. If not, I am. And on June the 16th, we'll start the discussion on the parking garage contract, and you'll review that second budget amendment. So just some key dates for the finance side. And that's all I have this morning.
Mr. Ingsoc.
You mentioned the mill rate. You're working on that. When do we, as the council, have to approve that? July?
On June 2nd, you will have it before you. I'm hoping to have the assessed values, because those are usually certified on May 31st. And on June the 8th would be the night that you would approve the mill levy. It has to be approved by the 15th of June.
By the 15th of June, we have to have it done. Okay, thanks.
Yes.
Ms. Therrien.
Jerry was showing me that when Mr. Pritesh withdrew all of his money, it was way over $150,000. How does that hit our budget? And is there any way that we could encourage people to take some of their money out earlier? And I just wondered if you had any comments about that, because that was a significant amount of money.
Yes. During all negotiations, and I would say for the last three negotiations, we have been putting a cap. Prior to putting a cap of 600 hours, it's 1,040, I believe, for fire, because their scheduling is a little different than your regular 40 hours. We have addressed that, because prior to that, it was unlimited, and there was a grandfather clause in both PSEA and in the IBEW contract that allowed them to have a certain amount of time to bring their numbers down. However, what we do is we have what we call a leave fund. And that leave fund has the value of our liability for leave. So there's always an account that makes sure that we have the amount of money that is needed for the leave. And it is expensed as an employee earns it. And just the accounting mechanism of it, there is an accrual that is happening in a different fund as the person earns it. So even though an employee may have years that they're accumulating, it's only expense for the amount that they earn in that year that you see under the budget, which we've accounted for. The amounts that they've earned in prior years that they haven't taken is over in this other fund called a leave fund, and it's an internal service fund. And I'll point it out, when we review it in the Finance Committee, we look at all the funds at once, and when we review the audit, I'll point that out to you where it is, and you'll see that it's over $2.1 million.
If I could just follow up, do the employees earn interest on that money as well, or does the city earn
it? The city earns the interest. The employee takes it. Once the employee takes it, we pay at whatever rate they make at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we do accrue and update that number every year. So as an employee's increasing in their rates, we're also increasing the liabilities as well to cover that increase.
And if I could just follow up one more thing, how many other people are we grandfathered in this 2.1 million?
I think we only have one other employee that's under the PSEA contract. That is still grandfathered for over the 600 hours.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mr. Ingsoc.
Margarita, you said that on that question of the accruing the interest, when they take it, they get paid. Do they get paid at the rate when they accrued it, or they pay the rate when they retire?
They are paid at the rate. Their current rate. So
their current rate. So what they accrued 10 years ago,
right,
they're getting their current rate for.
Correct.
That's noticeably different.
Yeah. That's they're paid at the rate, their current rate.
And we are just in the liability to match what that rate is at that time. Yeah.
Okay, council member comments. Ms. Sprinkle.
I don't have much, except that I saw a lot of activity across the street in the park. Looks like they're actually building something now, which is really, really exciting. I'm going to follow up with whoever at assembly can talk to us, maybe in their next meeting, to say, you know, good work or what's going to happen. I just think it's really nice to see something happening. So that's all I've got.
I think that park should be finished this year.
Great. Excellent.
Ms. Therian?
Yes, I was just wondering, with regard to our 250th anniversary of independence, is the city going to have any special things happen? I hope so.
Yes.
Because I couldn't get to Boston to see the Boston Pops play on the river.
Mr. Sanders.
Well, I didn't hear what you said, Mayor.
Oh, sorry. I just said we're so excited that you asked, because, yes, we've been busy planning that with different partners in town, and Mr. Sanders can give us an update.
So there's a lot of stuff going on in town. So one of the big events is, you know, the Midnight Sun game on the 4th of July. That's going to be a huge event. But the event that the city is hosting, I think it's probably one of the coolest events. But I may be a little biased. On July 8th, we are hosting the reading of the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration was read publicly the first time on July 8th. So communities all over the country are going to be reading it at the exact same time. For us, it's at 2 p.m. But what we decided to do was make it a full day of events. We're gonna bring over a bunch of our heavy equipment, you know, like fire trucks and plows and whatnot, and we're gonna have it out here, and we're gonna have, you know, maybe a, you know, barbecue grill and some hot dogs or something, you know, and then we're gonna invite food trucks. We're gonna we got a wholesale license for America 250 swag, like you see in the back here. So we were able to get a bunch of, assuming that it actually shows up, we're able to get a bunch of stuff to hand out to the public at a really, really cheap price. So I think it's going to be a fun day, and we're going to do tours of this building, the police station and fire station. It's just going to be, you know, a great event. I heard the firefighters are going to bring out a bouncy house, so I'm sure they'll bring in some kids too. So. We're really looking forward to it, and this is one of the things where I don't know the last time I saw the department heads as excited as they were when we started talking about this event. Like, you know, people are just coming up like, oh, we can do this and we can do that, and I'm like, yeah, let's do it all. So it's gonna be great.
And then generally, for the city of Fairbanks, there's a they've really honed in on baseball and the history of baseball, and so there's like a traveling museum or a traveling historic event, Morris Thompson Center, and is it DNR? It's a weird department, I think.
Yes. Forestry, maybe.
Forestry. Yeah, forestry is kind of running point on those. There's a lot of activities that are happening around, but as Mr. Sanders said, July 8th is the one for the city. Ms. Sprinkle?
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Real quick, I would love to know who's going to read the declaration, and will they wear a white wig? Please say yes.
I think that it should be elected officials reading it. And if, you know, if elected officials want to wear white wigs, that sounds okay. Great.
Oh, so. God, I didn't see that coming. Holy smokes. All right. Very good.
Yeah.
Ms. Therian.
I was hoping that we can get the military involved and do a 24-gun salute and maybe have music with as part of this. I think that would really enhance it when you do the orature. If we could do that, I think that would be really nice. With a flyover from the military and everything. Oh my God, yeah, let's do it, yeah.
I think they are doing some of that stuff for the 4th of July. I know that was in the original planning. I don't know about, I mean, I could reach out to the Deputy Garrison Commander, see if we could do something for our event too, but yeah.
No, I think it would. if we did something like that to really highlight our 4th of July.
So the Midnight Sun baseball game took it.
4th. That's unusual. Is that right? Is that what you said?
Well, they're going to have a game at midnight. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be the official.
I see. Okay, yeah. Good.
Oh, they're
okay, cool.
And we are slightly limited with the budget. We don't really have any money for this. So, you know, we have to be realistic about what we can afford.
Well, do an amendment to the budget. I think this is really important.
I love those words.
You're really
oh my God,
it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, if you ever lived in Boston during any of that 4th of July stuff, you know, it is way great.
They have a different budget.
Yeah. Okay, Ms. Tidwell. Mr. Barney?
Well, I got to thinking last night about Resolution 5213. That's the spur line. My hope is that we don't get gouged like we normally do, that we get a decent rate, you know, for the gas. That would be the only thing I would add to that, because, you know, it doesn't do us any good if we get the spur line and we can't afford it. So,
Mr. Ringstead.
Okay. So our next meeting is June 2nd. That's the next work session. So we have a couple weeks to relax. And with that, at 8:38, we're adjourned.